Yeah, hold that woodpile down. I think that's a great song for here, and it's performed by some here people. That's the Horsenecks, Barry and Gabrielle. And I've been working a lot in my woodpile. Got the splinters and to show for it. But it's nice to have a little bit of dry wood, thanks to my neighbors. And wanted to send that one, and may have time for another one, to a very good friend. This is Arts Live and Local from the parking lot, by the way, folks. This is KMUN, and I'm very happy to be here, Carol. And I wanted to send that for the woodpile and also for the fiddling to a very dear friend who left us in body last week, or this past week. That'd be Jim Fink. Hasn't lived here for a while, but he always lives here. I want to send that out to Caroline and to Jim and his family. And a fiddler, a shape note singer, never forget that, an artist, mathematician, and a great friend with a great sense of humor. So we say farewell to Jim, but not to his spirit. And best of healing wishes to Caroline and the family, and to all of you who may be dealing with healings. There are so many these days. A special healing for Sue Z, Frederica, and Ben Frederica, Earl Newman, Jeannie McCleary. And a big thank you to all of you listeners who have stepped up to the plate, whether you were members before or new members, not so new members. We got one coming on as my first guest who's been around supporting the station for many years. Especially want to thank Imogen Gallery. Wow. And she's thanking KMUN for keeping the community informed on art happenings throughout the region, even during the pandemic. Lots of folks wrote us lots of great notes. We like that. Keeps us all feeling good wherever we're broadcasting from. And most folks are from home. Also to Janet and John, Tillamook, Gail and Russell in Yakima, Kathy in Warrenton, Jack in Astoria, Betty in Ocean Park, Amy in Long Beach, and to my beloved Carol in Squamish, and to Sydney and Robin and Tessa and Sev and all the family. Thank you so much to all of you. And the way you can join that list, thanking the station for keeping on the air, which I've been doing, meaning thanking the station I am so, so grateful, is to go to KMUN.org. It's as simple as that. There's a red button. Click it. Give whatever you want. Any amount makes you a member. There are other special memberships, business, etc. And right now, you can even call 503-325-0010. Or as Lisa would say, oh, and I can't forget Lisa. Oh, she's on my list for sure. 325-0010. She speaks faster than light. Thank you, Buzz, for slowing her down. Thank you both for great programming, especially Lisa. So, folks, Mary Blake is here. If you've lived around here for a while, you know Mary Blake. And she knows you probably, too. Hey, Mary.
Hey, Carol, you sweet thing. It's so good to hear you and to be part of your incredible family and reach in our community. You are a rock star.
Well, the feeling is mutual. And you're actually, I don't know if you're doing anything with rocks, but you are the indomitable Mary Blake. You retire, but not from the community service, not from life, and not from the arts. So you've got a special project going, Art in the Park, and I don't even know where this is, Seaside Mill Ponds and Sunset Recreation Center.
Yes.
This sounds terrific. It's happening next week on Saturday from 1 to 4, and my understanding is it will be actual as well as virtual. Is that true?
You have all the basic information. Yes, indeed. I mean, especially in this new world that we're living in. Yes, you have it all down. The city of Seaside has 14 parks.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we did a park master plan refresh in 2018. And each park has a set of goals. People don't plan to fail. They fail to plan.
Nice.
So the Mill Ponds basically will be addressing ADA access, tackling invasive removal of species, native plantings, also our homeless population. Hmm. So we started to really kind of wrap ourselves around that, and we thought, you know, the thing that would bring people to our parks to really tell the deeper story is art. So this is our first launching of a very special event to actually get art in the park to help educate people. So it will be at the Mill Ponds, and if you don't know the Mill Ponds, they're the two ponds right behind Ruby's Restaurant and Les Schwab, right off of Highway 101.
Okay.
Or Recycle in Seaside. It's right by the recycling center.
Okay.
Yeah. And so there are two ponds there, and you may not know about it, but they were man-made over 125 years ago to basically get a quarry going to do all the roads and the airport roads. And then when they had enough material, then they went into a mill pond where they held the logs to take those off to market. And now we have regained it 21 years ago by the city and the North Coast Land Conservancy. And it's a 20-acre site that basically connects with the Neawana that takes you out to the estuary and to the ocean.
Mm.
Yeah, and so the coolest story about that are about our coho salmon that habitate in there. And so our first piece of art will be salmon in the trees. And I know, and it's a fabulous story because Jeff Anderson from the University of Washington did an application at Willapa Bay of Salmon in the Trees. And so we're replicating that to be able to raise the funds, to be able to put that story into the natural setting to help really take the breath out of people's minds when they start connecting really to the real world when they get back to nature.
So when you say you're going to be replicating, what does that mean? Are you going to have a great big poster, or is it going to be outside, inside? How does this happen? How does this work?
So this artist cuts out coho salmon, and then he's going to place it in the trees. Oh. And the reason why that will catch your eye, so it'll be a series of trees, and then you'll see the salmon, and you'll say to yourself, what in the heck are those shapes up there?
Uh-huh.
So the coho salmon basically spawn in the Neawana, but what happens in the life cycle of the coho salmon, it goes out to the ocean, and while it's living in the ocean, it absorbs the oxygen and the nutrients from the ocean, and then as it comes back through its habitat and starts to deteriorate through its natural process, it releases all those materials into the air, which then is captured by the leaves of the trees providing the shade on the water.
Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So it kind of blew my mind when I heard that story. I'm going, what?
Yeah. So this is not just a pretty face. This is real stuff, represented in an artful way that will ask questions. So. As people walk through, these are real trees, and they will have... Fantastic. I love it. So, okay.
So we're going to be using... Then we reached out to our artists, both alive as well as people who have just crossed through that thin veil, like you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. So I have people from my family and Kenny Hertig and other friends, Neil Main, who have donated their art for an auction, which is going to be at the Sunset Recreation Center, which is the old Broadway Middle School. So that'll be exciting for people to be able to go into that facility to see what it's all about. And the reason why we felt that we could do it inside as well as outside is that we will follow all the COVID-19 protocols. So we will invite you to the mill ponds, so you can meet the artist. You can also meet naturalists and get a free tree and a tote bag.
Mm.
Listen to some music. We've got drummers and folks there. Also, we have Brady Chandler, who has been really caring for the park through the seaside cleanups. So we'll do a little cleanup. We'll introduce you to this remarkable site. We'll give you information about the whole park system. And then if you want to walk around the it's just about 3/4 of a mile, so if you want to walk around the park, you can do that. But Carol, if you can't get out or you're still concerned about COVID protocols, we have friends in the Neconicum Watershed Council, and they put a new film that we did about the mill ponds at the neconicumwatershed.org/mill ponds. So virtually you can go to the ponds, get the education about that, and you can also download whole new sketch coloring book that our dear friend Dorota did for us, and that's all about the habitat that lives there on those 29 acres of our natural site. So there's a lot going on, and also, if you can't come to the auction, you can go virtually. We're going to do it live streamed.
What site is that on?
If you go to Art in the Park, Seaside, Oregon, they will have the that Zoom address, so you can register now, get online. So when we start the live auction, you'll come online, and then you'll be ready for it. So at 1 o'clock, we'll do the silent auction. Mm-hmm. And then at 2 o'clock, we'll do the live auction, and then we'll check everybody out from 3 to 4. So it'll be spinning a lot of plates up there in the universe.
Well,
I think that one
sounds,
way or the other, people can have fun.
That sounds just right for Mary Blake. let me just make sure I've got this right. artinthepark.seasideoregon/seasideoregon?
So it's artinthepark.seasideoregon@gmail.com if you want to go to the Gmail, and then the Facebook page is Art in the Park Seaside Oregon.
Art in the Park Seaside Oregon. Okay. Yep. Okay. Phew.
I know. And we got, and so we've been putting up pictures of the art, and we have all, oh my gosh. You know, when you start talking stories, Carol, it really, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, this is what community is all about. And, you know, when we said that we were going to try to put this on last year, we were so close to putting it on. Mm. But, of course, everybody's lives were really changed because of the pandemic. So this is, we've carried this through, and it has just grown bigger and better. And when people found out that we were raising, our goal was $10,000 to put that piece of art in that park. We have grants from Cultural Trust of Clatsop County. Mm-hmm. Also, the Seaside Tourism Department gave us a very substantial grant, as well as the Southwestern Garden Club, so we could do the, you know, coloring book and do the film. And then, oh my God, we had one of our other dear friends, Mary Hirsch, that did a challenge grant. Mm-hmm. She challenged $3,000 to match that, because she was the Gonzaga kind of goofball on the round ball on March Madness. So we got the $3,000 matched to that. So we are walking into this event with $6,000 right now.
Fantastic.
So we are so close. And I would like to throw out a match to new members as well as old members that haven't signed up for a while. And I'll put up to $250 for people who call in to get their support to our beloved KMUN.
Whoa.
So can you make that happen?
Gee, Mary, that's a surprise completely, folks, for real. If you know Mary, you can believe me. Mary just, if I'm understanding correctly, put a challenge grant out to you, dear listeners. If you call in during the arts program, up to $250,
yep.
Mary will match it. So call right now, 503-325-0010, and tell them you're calling about the arts match, and we'll get it taken care of. This is fabulous. Now, if they don't have a phone.
Carol,
yes.
You did this. The first time I moved to this area, I went to one of your absolutely phenomenal events, the auction down at the Cannon Beach. And I tell you, you were as spitfire, and you got all of us so excited. And I walked out of there with a butterfly walk with Robert Pyle and heirloom jewelry and treasures, you know, talents, treasures, and time from people who put their heart and soul into things that make our community our community, the
Absolutely. Services
that we give back. And that it really is what it is all about.
Absolutely.
You know, what Margaret Mead said at the best, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever does. So
here we are.
Here we are, holding hands and going to get back to getting together and feel that heartbeat again.
Okay, now, Mary,
Jesus won.
For people who, I keep saying, if you live around here, you know Mary, but there are people listening all over the world, including Squamish, who don't know Mary. And so I just would appreciate your telling us briefly what you recently retired from over at the, right next door to the brand new Sunset Recreation Center.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I got paid to play, and I would tell people, if you can follow your passion, that's what it's about. It was a privilege to be the general manager for the Sunset Empire Park and Recreation District for almost 30 years, and that was coming over from the city of Portland. I was the aquatic coordinator for the bureau there, and I figured that I really wanted to make an impact, because I wanted to come to a small community that did big things. And this place on our planet is one of the best places I've ever been in the world. So, I had the privilege of working with people and agencies and organizations that we can't do things alone. So we all kind of...
Yep.
came together, and you know, we would have our plans, of course, but my God, if we got out of our own ways, the universe leaned in and said, wait a second, why don't we do this, this, and this, and we have made this place because it is just, you know, it's the essence of what we're all about, and it's really about energy, and it's really about essentially love, that we're loving our community. And in community, if you look at that word, it's unity. So it's when we all cross paths and realize that we are all connected. And I mean that with all sincerity. We breathe the same air.
Mm-hmm.
And we drink the same water. And it is our responsibility to be good stewards for all of our environmental issues because we have left Mother Earth in a terrible way. The reason why we picked our art in the park during this particular week and this particular time because it's in the celebration of Earth Day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that is really bringing our focus back because if we don't have a healthy world, the human being is going to be one of the first ones, you know, to be pushed off the edge so the rest of the Earth can kind of get back into balance.
Ditto. You say it so well. Well, let's come back to that. First, I just want to remind folks, I don't know if anybody's called because I'm sitting in my car in the parking lot. and so if you call 503-325-0010, and possibly if you get online and punch that donate button, if you do it right now, during the arts program, Mary will honor that as well, up to $250 match. Thank you so much, Mary. Speaking of art in the park, in this case, now the fish that are going up in the trees,
yes.
Is that just for that one day?
Well, so what we're going to do, the artist is from Washington, so he's going to come down and we're going to pick the installation. So the coho salmon that will go up there are made of stainless steel and aluminum.
Oh.
And so he will install up to seven images in the trees. But because we actually are probably going to go over our goal of $10,000 because these, you know, the salmon actually, you know, move through these waterways. If you go along the waterway, there's there are the mill ponds, and then as you go toward the ocean, there the Broadway Park has another stand of trees mm-hmm. where the osprey nest is too. That you can go online and watch live. The pair of osprey, they're already getting on and going fishing and laying eggs and that's a trip in and of itself. And that website is still that one on the Nakanikum watershed. So that's a live feed from the osprey nest in Broadway Park.
Fantastic. Okay, so the event is happening Saturday, a week from tomorrow, the 17th, from 1 to 4 p.m.,
yep.
And there's an auction as well. It's live and it's virtual.
Yes.
Is there one place that people can go to find all of the stuff we were just talking to? Is it posted somewhere? Hopefully it's on KMUN's calendar, but is it somewhere else as well?
Yeah, you can go to the Facebook piece, Art in the Park, Seaside, Oregon,
okay.
And that'll pull up all, and they'll have pictures of the mill pond,
great.
They'll have pictures of the art pieces. We'll also have a list of all the auction protocols because people are going to have to wear
right.
their masks and be, you know, real calm and keep social distancing
right.
and wash their hands.
Well, we know that's a given.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm not on Facebook, so I'm going to figure out how to get around this. But very exciting, of course. Mary Blake, thank you so, so much for staying engaged. I know you couldn't be anything but, so I'm not surprised. Thank you also for being part of the history and present of KMUN Community Radio. And we love you.
Oh, we love you. I love
okay.
you, Carol. You take
Be
care.
Be well. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's, again, folks, next week, check it out, Art in the Park. And you are listening to KMUN. That's KMUN.org or coastradio.org. 503-325-0010. Let's make sure that we allow Mary to give generously. So match that challenge grant. Coming up, we've got a song from beloved Ann Feeney. And this one goes out to the Amazon workers. Stay tuned. We got lots more coming. I want to send out kudos to the workers who voted for a union. This is my personal view. Bravo to them. They were fighting an uphill battle, but they took it on. And more power to them. They didn't win this time, but it'll be happening. No one needs to be a zillionaire while other people are starving and being evicted from their homes. My personal opinion, again, it's a mystery. And speaking of mysteries here at KMUN on Arts Live and Local from the parking lot, I have a guest, J.A. Jance, who, not coincidentally, is a best-selling, within the top 10 New York Times best-selling authors in the mystery writing genre. So welcome, J.A.
I'm glad to be here. I have asthma's death, and I didn't have to fix my hair, and I didn't have to put on makeup.
That's us. We always we always feel that way. There's also a lot of things you can do, and nobody's keeping track of you. I must admit, Zoom is good because you can turn off the video, but television probably doesn't work. Well, you've probably had hundreds of interviews by all kinds of people because I couldn't even attempt to keep track of what you have been doing. You and I are about a month apart, month and a half apart in age. So I was trying to figure out how many books you have been writing per year. When did you start? Why did you start? And how did you get into mystery? I love mystery unless it's too scary. So I'm not really sure. I'm going to give it to you and ask you to tell us. First, I'll just let folks know tomorrow, and you can join J.A. Jance. However, she won't be on radio. She'll be right there almost live at the Cannon Beach Library.org on their Zoom link or on their Facebook link. And they are hosting her as part of their series. They're doing a wonderful series. And this is at 2 p.m. tomorrow. Again, CannonBeachLibrary.org. And the topic is Her Life and Times 2021 edition. So go for
it. Well, that's because I've done events in Cannon Beach before.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so people have heard what I've said before, and I'm hoping tomorrow I'll say some things they haven't heard before.
Okay, but people,
to answer your question about when did I start writing and how, I always wanted to be a writer from second grade on.
Ooh.
When I signed up to be an English major at the University of Arizona in 1964, I tried to get into the creative writing program, and the professor said, "You're a girl." And he wouldn't let me take his class. He said,
"Oh my gosh.
Girls become teachers or nurses, boys become writers."
Oh my gosh.
So I became first a teacher and later a librarian.
Uh huh.
I married a guy who was allowed in his class. My first husband imitated Faulkner and Hemingway primarily by drinking too much and writing too little. He died of booze at age 42, a year and a half after I divorced him.
Wow.
Having published nothing.
Wow.
But that didn't keep him from saying to me in 1968, there's only going to be one writer in our family, and I'm it.
Oy.
So I didn't actually start writing until I was 38 years old. I was a divorced single mom with two little kids, no child support, a full-time job selling life insurance, and the only time I had to write was from 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. when I got my kids up to go to school and got me ready to go sell life insurance. So those three hours in the morning were all I had.
So
the first book I wrote was never published by anybody. It was 1,400 pages long.
Oh, my God.
The second book I wrote was Until Proven Guilty. That's the first book in the J.P. Beaumont series. And I'm working on, I believe, book number 24 in that series right now. And before I went out to get my steps, I crossed the 50% mark in the new Beaumont book. So I write every day.
Okay,
Hold on a second.
The J.P. Beaumont series. Again, there are folks listening who are not familiar with you. So what is that? Who's J.P. Beaumont?
Beaumont is J.P. Beaumont, when I started writing about him back in the early 80s, was a middle-aged Seattle homicide cop. And because I needed to remember how old he was, I gave him my birthday. So Bo and I are the same age. And so as I've written about him, the world of crime has changed. When I started writing about him, what they could do with blood evidence found at a crime scene was type it. There was no DNA. Mm-hmm. There was no automatic fingerprint identification system. So those changes in law enforcement forensics have happened over the course of my writing. And, of course, Bo's experience has changed, too. He has had to be dragged kicking and screaming into the digital world. Now he happily works his crossword puzzles on his iPad.
What prompted you to go into this area of writing? Was it because you wanted to...
It was because I had always read mysteries.
Okay.
From Nancy Drew on. I love mysteries, and I wrote mysteries. So I have the Beaumont books. Joanna Brady is a sheriff set in southeastern Arizona, where I grew up. When I started writing about Beaumont, I had lived in Seattle less than 2 years, and he was a Seattle native. Mm-hmm. When I had the opportunity to create another series, I thought, well, how about pressing the easy button and writing about someplace I don't know.
Right.
So Joanna is set in Cochise County. The Allie Reynolds books, I believe there are 17 of those now with 18 coming. Those are set in and around Sedona. And then I have 5 Walker family books. Those are set on the Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation west of Tucson, where I was a K-12 librarian for a number of years. So I've used my own background and the locales I've lived in to create my book.
So how does this work? I was not aware that maybe you're the only one, work on a series and then have another. You've got 3 series going at the same time. How does your brain, how does that happen? How do you keep Beaumont separate from Brady and Walker?
I keep them separate because they're different people. They have different family situations. They have different lives. They have different experiences. And it's no problem. When I first met J.P. Beaumont on a train, I've been trying to write that first book for about 6 months, and I could not get that story to come together. So that in the spring of 1983, I sent my 2 kids to Camp Orcala for spring break. And then I put myself on a train to go down to Portland to spend some time 5 days with a friend from my days in the insurance business. And when I got on the train, I got on it with a stack of Blue Line notebooks and a fistful of pens. And as the train pulled out of the King Street station, I thought, well, what would happen if I wrote this story through the detective's point of view? So I pulled out a tablet, I pulled out a pen, and I wrote the words, "She might have been a cute kid once. That was hard to tell now. She was dead."
Oy.
And as soon as I wrote those words, I was in Beau's head.
Wow.
I was walking around the crime scene in his shoes. I was hearing what he heard, hearing what was he said, but I was also hearing what he was thinking. And when it's time to write a Beaumont book, within a couple of pages, I'm back in Beau's world. And it's totally different from Allie's world and totally different from Joanna Brady's world. In the next Allie Reynolds book, the Allie Reynolds books belong to Simon & Schuster, and Beaumont books belong to HarperCollins. In the next Allie book, that's a book set in Arizona, but it had cold case connections to, it had connections to a cold case from here in Washington. And I thought, well, I already have a perfectly good cold case guide. Beau is now doing, he's now retired and doing cold case.
Wow.
So I negotiated a peace treaty between my two publishers.
Oh, my God.
To let Beaumont come be in an Allie Reynolds book. But the Allie books are told in third person with multiple points of view. And I expected that when Beau showed up in the upcoming Allie book called Unfinished Business, that he'd be a good boy and turn up in the third person, too. Well, hell wouldn't have it. He turned up in all his first-person curmudgeonly glory, and if he couldn't be in the first person, he wouldn't be in the book.
Wait a second. I have to, this is hilarious. I also want to let my listeners know, our listeners know, that I read a bit of your biography, and I understand, I don't know how old this is, that you live with two long-haired miniature dachshunds. So when you talk about your Beau asserting himself, I'm just picturing how your household, your J.A. Jantz actual household works with the dogs asserting themselves. I don't know how it, but I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Here's the deal with dachshunds. I was always a big dog person. I had golden retrievers, and my second husband, the nice one, and I have had golden retrievers and an Irish wolfhound and mostly big dogs. And my husband, Bill and I met at a widowed retreat in 1985, where we discovered our first spouses had died on the same day of the year, two years apart. We met on the 21st of June. We got married on the 21st of December. Mm. And one thing I learned about Bill was that back in the old, old days, when a boyfriend, before the first date, he went to meet the woman, Lynn, his first wife. He went to meet Lynn's parents before they went out on their first date. Mm-hmm. And the family dog, a dachshund named Moxie, took one look at Bill, said, "You are the enemy," and immediately attacked Bill's foot hard enough to draw blood and wreck his sock.
Oh, geez.
Although Bill and Lynn married, Moxie hated Bill with an abiding passion until his dying day. So Bill always didn't like dachshunds. And so I often referred to dachshunds when I encountered one, when one of my characters encountered one in my book, they were referred to as wafts, wastes of fur. And then about 10 years ago, coming home from a shopping trip with my five-year-old grandson and my daughter, we found an abandoned dachshund, a long-haired miniature dachshund, running down a street. And my daughter stopped the car. I bailed out of the passenger seat, chased this dog for the better part of a mile, and eventually we brought this poor little starving creature home. She should have weighed 11 pounds. She weighed 7. She was scared to death. She had been abandoned with no chip, no. So.
And what did Bill say?
That dog came into our into our lives, and we tried desperately to find the owner. And when we couldn't find her, we brought the dog home. And Colt, my grandson, was 5. And as we came into the house, he was explaining to Grandpa how we found this poor little fella on the road. And Grandpa explained to Colt, fella is a boy's name, and this is a girl. This is a girl dog.
Uh-huh.
And Colt said, all right, we'll call her Bella. And Bella came into our lives
sweet.
And absolutely won our hearts. And that's why we have 2 long-haired miniature dogs.
So,
now, we lost Bella a few years ago. But if a FedEx driver drove up right now, all hell would break loose.
Oh, protection. Well, it sounds as though I don't want to say real because your books are clearly extremely real, but it sounds as though your life in Seattle is very much touched by the same spirits that touch your books, that they assert themselves, whether they're dogs or grandchildren, bravo, or Beau or Joanna. Whoever they are,
and also my fans. I stay in close touch with my fans, and I write a blog. It's published every Friday morning on my website jajans.com. /blog.
Good.
And this morning's blog was about my best friend from 4th grade on, who suffered a stroke last week while driving home from having her nails done in Florida.
Oh, dear.
And because her phone was in her purse on the floor of her car, she crawled into her house and didn't have a phone and lay on the floor for 24 hours before she finally managed to crawl over and drag the house phone down from the dresser and call for help. So this morning's blog is all about keeping your devices with you and when you're people of a certain age and the importance of being able to call for help.
So we are out of time, actually, J.A. So I want to stress to people, I just wrote that down, J.A. Jance, that's JANCE.com/blog. I personally, I'm going to check it out, and I recommend that others do, too. But you can also meet J.A. almost in person tomorrow at 2 p.m. at the CannonBeachLibrary.org. Click on Zoom. That might be most fun because then you can interact, or on Facebook. And afterwards, that will stay on the site. But it's nice if you can go while she is there. And the good news is J.A. lives right in Seattle, so she's not very far away. I suspect once the world reopens, you will be coming back down. So,
I've been to Cannon Beach many times.
Well, I can't wait to meet you because you're a ball of fire. This show has been two women balls of fire, so it's pretty exciting. So thank you so much for joining me. I hope to see you tomorrow if I can get make contact through the computer. And in the meantime, I look forward to reading your blog as well. Thanks so much for joining me on KMUN, jajance.com. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Music, folks. Here's some more fiddle for Jim Fink and you. Hey, folks, while we're reaching out for our last guests, here's the tricky part of Live and Local from the parking lot. Nevada's doing the great job of calling folks. I just want to make sure you know that this weekend is Art Walk. Check out Coast Weekend. You can see all of the shows. I went over to Imogen and saw some gorgeous work by Deb Stoner. If you are involved in the gardens, color, art of any kind, you will want to be there. Also, if you happen to be an Astoria High School graduate from the early 50s, you might know Don Stoner, who is the father of Deb Stoner. Yeah, an Astoria High School graduate, and there is a photograph, there's some historical photos in the work. We've got lots, 15 galleries listed, plus Brumfield Gallery as well. And also the Sou'wester has a concert with Wheezy Ford. And tonight we have Riverbend. They were my guests last week. They're virtual only Friday and Saturday evenings at 7, Sunday at 2 with the Dog Logs. We were just talking about all the dog. And they are actually going to be on stage acting, but we are only able to see them virtually. So check that out. And the Heritage Museum is open 10 to 4 daily with an amazing exhibit, Away From Home, American Indian Boarding School Stories. That's at 1618 Exchange. Tuesday, by the way, is Word Fest with Florence Sage, 7 o'clock. And Wednesday is Coast Weekend Book Club, Facebook at 6 o'clock. And by the way, Bob Pyle, whose piece Mary Blake walked away with, Bob Pyle was one of the finalists for the Pen. And so I got to watch that last night. Okay, well, we're not sure what happened to our guest. One of our guests is MIA, but we've got one, so let's go ahead and put him on. This is Arts Live and Local, and my friend, our friend, KMUN's friend, and programmer, Bob Goldberg is there. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Carol.
And the other guest was to be Denise Reed, who is the conductor for the North Coast Chorale, but something is not working with the telephones. Maybe she will call in. Meanwhile, tell us what's happening. I understand it's going to be tonight at 7, and then Sunday at 4, and then next Sunday at 4, and this is all live.
Yes, the first live performance at the PAC since COVID.
Right, and this would be the Charlene Larson Center for the Performing Arts, a.k.a. the PAC, here in Astoria, 16th and Franklin. This is the first time they're opening for human consumption. Only 50 people, and you must get your tickets online or possibly by phone, but you must get your tickets at partnersforthepac.org. That's partners with an S for the PAC. Write it out, PAC.org. Go there right now. Get your ticket for tonight or Sunday at 4 or next Sunday, the 18th at 4. So what's the concert about, Bob?
So this is an Easter concert that includes music that we were to perform last year sometime, but that didn't happen. In fact, we were just getting ready to perform the Lux Aeterna for Easter last year, and that was postponed and then canceled. And it also includes the what's considered the Easter portion of the Messiah, Handel's Messiah, which are the latter choruses, and that's traditionally been kind of an Easter performance. So it'll be the Lux Aeterna and the latter part of Messiah. Both were supposed to be performed last year, but here you go.
Hey, this is fantastic, though. This is very exciting for the newly owned and named the Charlene Larson Center for the Performing Arts, the PAC, 16th and Franklin. This is live. And if you don't have tickets, go to partnersforthepac.org now and get them. If you show up at the door and you have a cell phone, you'll be able to get them online too. But they do not have the facility to sell tickets. It will be safely put together following CDC rules for COVID. And we're all very excited that the building is opening up again for performances. And I really appreciate that the North Coast Chorale is doing this. Now, have you been rehearsing with the chorale all during the year, or did you stay home for a while and now you're back? Or Denise mentioned something about joining in.
Yeah, so the chorale has been rehearsing. Well, the chorale rehearsed in the fall for doing the Messiah, which we did via Zoom or Facebook on the page of the food bank. And I wasn't involved in that one. They did the first half of the Messiah and the Hallelujah chorus, and it was really well done. It was in the pack, and the chorale was in the seats. It was no audience. Chorale was in the seats, very heavily spaced, with these awesome singer masks on.
Yeah.
And it was a very good concert. They also had some accompaniment there, some strings and piano. And then right after that concert, the rehearsals for the Lux Aeterna and the second half began, and I didn't go to those rehearsals until I was somewhat vaccinated.
Right.
In February. So the rehearsals were in sectionals and just a few people for each rehearsal, and all the protocols were observed, and as far as I know, no one has gotten sick from any of these rehearsals.
Are you wearing the special masks?
Yeah, these are special singer's masks. They're very large. They're really comfortable, very large, and they can allow you to have some air, but also they block all of those emissions mm-hmm. from your mouth when you're singing, because it's when you're singing, there's a lot of stuff coming out. So they're really good, and the chorale got those for us, and we've been using those. We're separated, and everything is sanitized, and the pack will be well provided for, and people will be observing all the protocols. Masks required for audience, and I guess we hope that people show up. It's really exciting. There just hasn't been very much live performance in Astoria.
It's extraordinary. It's extraordinarily exciting that there is going to be a live performance. And part of buying the tickets in advance, folks, is that if you are, for example, a bubble of three or four people, you can sit together. And then there will be, that's why there's only 50 tickets going. And then they'll be spread out around you. If you're solo, fine. You can get one seat, and there won't be anyone right next to you. So do check that out. Again, partnersforthepac.org. And so you're going to be doing Lux Aeterna. How do you pronounce that?
Lux Aeterna. It's Eternal Life. And it's Martin Lauridsen, who was Oregon resident, and he's a modern composer, has produced a lot of really excellent works. We've performed several of his before, and we've done the Luke Aeterna before.
Right.
It's a gloriously beautiful
piece. It is. It's beautiful. And then I wasn't even aware. You just taught me something new about the Messiah. We all think of it as Christmas time music, Handel's Messiah, but the fact that part of it is used for Easter as well. And then will you be doing some other songs as well?
That's it. Just
okay.
So because of protocols, we don't want to have people in the same place for too long. So
right.
The concert will be 1 hour.
Right.
And we've narrowed it down to songs that take 1 hour and timed it.
Okay.
And there won't be any refreshments or lingering.
Right.
Sorry, but it will be live.
Okay, so that is tonight at 7 o'clock, 16th and Franklin. You can't miss it. It was once a church, then it belonged to the college, and now it is owned by Trinity LLC and the Partners for the PAC. And this is the North Coast Chorale. Denise Reed will be conducting. And it is tonight at 7, Sunday at 4, or next Sunday at 4. You can get tickets for any one of those performances. Support live art. Very exciting. Thank